Pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast. And here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, a.k.a. Menes. And I have three guests this week. I have one regular panelist, Paul Dennett. How are you, Paul?
Hey, Menes. Great to be here.
And I have two very special guests. The first one is a sports journalist for ABC Grandstand and co-host of the podcast This Sporting Wife. Welcome to the show, Shannon Byrne. How are you?
Hello. Thank you for having me, Andrew. And hi, Paul. And I won't say hello to my next guest because you can introduce them.
And our second guest is Daily Telegraph Swoop and sports homepage editor. She's the co-host of This Sporting Wife podcast. She's a wife, mother, reality TV lover, and exercise avoider and wine drinker. Welcome to the show, Fiona Boland. How are you?
I'm really good, Menes. Thanks for having me.
Now, I was reading about your podcast, This Sporting Wife, and it says that you just can't get enough of sport for both of you, and you're not satisfied in finding yourselves married to sport through work, but you enjoy committing your spare time to it as well. So thanks for coming along to the podcast and committing more of your spare time to sport.
Well, we wouldn't be here if we didn't love sport that much. So here we are, continuing our love of it through another podcast today.
Excellent. We've got a lot to get through. We're going to review the Australia v Pakistan one-day series. We've got to read and react about the Big Bash League. Then we're going to talk about all things women's Big Bash. And we're also going to wrap the show up with a commentary critique, which is one of my favourite segments. But let's start with the Australia v Pakistan ODI series. Australia have sealed the series 3-1 with an 86-run victory at the SCG on Sunday. Let's start with the first one-day international. Australia's star was Matthew Wade, who scored 100 off 100 balls, brought up off the last ball of the innings. And I think Matthew Wade is an interesting character at the moment because, you know, he's copped a lot of criticism about his wicket-keeping, but do we think he's a popular figure within Australian cricket circles?
Look, it was an interesting one. I was there at the SCG in that super round in the Sheffield Shield where he was actually selected alongside Peter Hanscom and also Nick Maddison. So he was quite quiet when the photographers and everyone wanted to get, a piece of Peter Hanscom. But everyone was having their opinion on social media about whether Wade should be in or not over Peter Neville. So you've got a guy who's gone straight back into the side, I think, under the most pressure, because a lot of people at that particular point and time didn't want him in the team. So for a man to, I guess, get scrutinised with the gloves, they were saying he wasn't the best man with the glove. I think what he did with the bat has quietly proven, you know, what he's all about. Then chuck in the poor saga he had with Glenn Maxwell as well, you know, his own, you know, state teammate having a go at him in his captaincy and where he should be in the batting order. I actually do feel sorry for him because he wasn't wanted in the team by the public, but when you go and see what he is doing, at least he's doing something well with the bat. And I think the first ODI, he needed to do something like that.
What was interesting was about Matthew Wade and Glenn Maxwell partnering in that game. And I just wonder what the mid-pitch conversations were like in that game. What do you think, Paul?
I'm naive enough to think that they're over it and that they're happy. I think that there's still lingering resentment there and that Wade is acting as though it's all good, but he's putting on an act. I think that they probably just put it behind them.
Well, let's hope so, for the good of Australian
cricket. Can I just say, though, with teammates, you don't have to have beers with them after. They're professional, that they would be playing with guys that they don't get along with, that they wouldn't be friends with outside the game. So
same on this podcast.
Regardless, exactly, of whether they get along or not, it doesn't matter. If they're being professional out in the field, which we saw they were, you can always speculate whether they're friends or not. And if they're not friends, it doesn't matter. You can admit that you won't go and have a beer with every one of your teammates.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bit of a myth, I think, that you have to be friends in team sport all the time. And I guess there are always factions.
I think it'd be crazy to think anyone gets along with every workmate. Like, I know I work in a really big office and there's tensions among people all the time because you can't get along with everyone. And like Shannon said, it just shows the professionalism of these guys that they get out there and they do their job.
I think Maxwell was dropped, wasn't included, because they wanted him to realise that he has to fit in with the team and the culture and not say things out of school. So I don't think Matthew Wade had anything to worry about. And if Maxwell wanted to come into the side, which he has, and fit it in, then he's the one that has to fit into that team.
So Australia won that first one-day international, bowling Pakistan all out for 176. Then we moved on to the second ODI, which Pakistan surprisingly won by 6 wickets, which was Pakistan's first one-day international win in Australia for 12 years. It ended a run of 16 consecutive losses to Australia in all formats. And it was the first win at the MCG for Pakistan over Australia since 1985. And it was a much-needed boost for the one-day series, but turned out to be a false storm because the next two matches went really easily to Australia. So let's move on to the third match. Australia won the match by 7 wickets with 5 overs remaining. And this is, and Shannon and Fiona, this is never planned, but every week there seems to be a Steve Smith segment because he's just breaking records week after week. So this week, the Steve Smith stats segment is back. The Australian captain brought up his 3,000th run in one-day international cricket when he passed 60 at the Wacker Ground on Thursday. No Australian has ever reached the 3,000-run mark faster, with Smith taking one fewer innings than Michael Bevan and George Bailey, who both reached the milestone in 80 innings. Globally, Smith is the 11th fastest man to reach 3,000 runs. And here's a great stat. It took him 36 innings to score his first 1,000 runs in one-day international cricket. But for his next 2,000 runs, it took just 45 more innings, which is amazing. And since the start of 2014, he has averaged 52.31 in one-day international cricket. An absolutely astonishing run of form in one-day international cricket. Now, ladies, I want to start with you. Big fans of Australian cricket. Fiona, I know you're a big fan of the 90s, but tell me, where does Smith sit in the pecking order of Australian captains in terms of popularity? I would argue that Steve Smith is already more popular than Michael Clarke and Ricky Ponting.
I tend to agree with that. Definitely Michael Clarke.
Which would be hard.
Yeah. I think I don't like to judge when they're still playing because there's so much more ahead of Steve Smith and so much more that he can do. But from what we've already seen, he's going to be up there, isn't he? Captains among the Australian public just have such a special place and you're always going to find supporters of them. I think Steve Smith will be right up there come the end of it. But based on what he achieves on field, as well as the results.
He's such a likable sort of Aussie guy. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He's just so emotional. I think we can all sort of identify with him.
Because I think too, really this summer has probably nearly been coming of age in terms of his captaincy of leading the guys on and off the field. Because obviously in Hobart, we know the disaster, what happened there. He came out into the press conference and he said it wasn't good enough. He actually was really quite honest. He wasn't brutal, but he was very honest and he didn't shy away from what the Australian team needed to do. He kind of did it really in the beginning of the middle of the season as well when he said, our fielding hasn't been right. And then he came in and he led the way and, his catch against New Zealand made the American media and, you know, not just because of his brilliant, I think it was 0.6 seconds, the reaction. So he was leading from the front in everything he said that Australia needed to do better. So for my mind, that was a great moment of, I remember him saying, we need to be better in the field. He led by example with the catches over summer. He's always led with the bat. But when people have said how bad Australia had done against the series against South Africa, he has come out and absolutely shone with the bat. And the rivalry, I think, between him and Warner has been great. Leading into the SCG test, I was there at the press conference and both of them, I think, were sitting on 17 tons. And there was a bit of tongue in cheek said, so who's going to get the 18th first? And he just said, yeah, we're quite aware of, you know, that we're both on the same amount. Obviously, Warner came out and did that magnificent fast century in the first session of the morning, but you know, like, he's not shying away and his personality I think is coming out, but his leadership over this summer has been outstanding. 27 years of age,
yeah,
crazy.
I think there's still a step to go for Smith in terms of realizing how much power he wields in Australian cricket. I think he still needs to take charge a little bit. But Shannon, how do you find dealing with him one-on-one? I know you've done a couple of interviews with him. What do you think of him, like, when he's away and you're just preparing? What's he like as a person?
Yeah, no, fabulous. Very, I think, very receptive to the questioning, like he has over summer. Every question, whether it had been a hard one or an easy one, he's actually managed it. And he doesn't think people are having a go at him. If he doesn't like the question, he still answers it. I don't think, I think maybe with other captains you've seen that they've got their backup and they think that they're you're personally attacking them. Whereas straight away, I feel with Steve Smith, you could ask him anything and then allow him to answer it the way he wants, but I wouldn't shy away from asking him anything. So I think he's quite good in the way that all media find him and the way that he is very receptive to answering the questions.
Probably actually echoes of Mark Taylor in that he might have been the last captain who was very receptive to the questions no matter what. What I like about Smith is that when he took over from Clark, when Clark was injured against India, there are a couple of test matches that you could argue he was a bit too conservative and Australia got draws where they could have had wins. Contrast that with the SCG when Australia came out in their second innings and absolutely exploded, scoring at something like 7 runs and over, getting the Pakistanis back in and winning the game. I think that was a really refreshing change in terms of the aggression that he was showing, and I think he augurs well for the future.
Another player that augurs well for the future is Peter Hanscom, who made his debut in that third one-day international. He made 82. He almost was caught for a duck. And he became the fifth Australian batsman to score a 50 on his one-day international and test debut, joining Phil Hughes, Sean Marsh, Michael Slater and Kapila Vessels to achieve that feat. And then after the third one-day out, the series moved on to the fourth one-day international at the SCG. And it was dominated by the new king of the SCG, David Warner, whose 130 led Australia to a massive 353. It's fair to say David Warner has lit up the SCG all summer. The test match, both innings, now this one day. God, you'd be queuing up to see him bat again there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, he really loves it there. And he even came out after the match and said how much he loves playing at the SCG. And he thinks that all Australians should just relish being on the ground. That performance was almost a bit of a mic drop. He's getting a rest now before India. So it was like, see ya, I'll be back soon.
Signing off.
Yeah.
Signing off with a ton.
He should have moonwalked out of the changes.
He said, though, that he enjoyed being at home on the match day and doing his own routines at home. And I think we sometimes forget what it must be destabilizing. You know, they're always in hotels, and when they get back to the home ground and can stay in their own bed and stuff, it must give you a bit of a boost.
I think sports people are creatures of habit as well. Like, you'll find a lot of them like to have the same preparation before everything. So, yeah, you're right. It does become a bit more difficult for the cricketers who are quite often in different places. So to be around family, and that was the debate they had recently, wasn't it? Should family be around? You know, it might make a huge difference to how they perform.
Well, and to, you know, obviously he's a New South Welshman and he knows, I think, the prestige of the SCG as well. So, and Steve Smith's the same. So they not only flourish there, but it's so nice to see that that's their home ground. And what a way to come out of those change rooms. And, you know, it's his 8th ODI in 12 months, six times in 11 innings he has done that in all formats at the SCG as well. So he loves the SCG. So imagine he just must grow probably an extra inch on his bat as he walks out into the middle of the
SCG. I don't
think
the ICC will allow an extra inch on his bat. The great stats, Shannon. Love the stats on the Australian Cricket Podcast. So that was Warner's sixth international ton at the SCG, which takes him to second on the all-time list of international centuries at the ground. Ricky Ponting leads the way with 8 centuries there. It took him 69 innings, whereas it's only taken Warner 24 to get 6. So he's a fair shake at breaking that record.
But how good is Steve Smith and Warner's rivalry? Like, or how good are they batting? Some games they are both just explosive, or someone gets out for 7 and the other one goes on to make 60. Like, they are just complementing each other so well. It's just remarkable to watch these two.
They have the potential to go down as numbers 2 and 3 is Australia's all-time batsmen if they continue to play the way they are. The big test is coming up in India. That there's lots of doubters around the world about both of them away from home. I'm not a doubter. I'm convinced that they can do it in difficult conditions, but that remains to be seen in the next couple of months.
Yeah, I think as well their characters complement each other really well. They're really different characters, and I think, you know, when you look at someone who you want as your vice captain, Warner's got that scrappiness who can get the boys motivated, and Smith can concentrate on the tactics. And I think underneath it all, Shannon, there is something to that rivalry. Like, I think
a healthy rivalry.
Warner does covet the captaincy a little bit. So I think there's a sort of undercurrent there of an edge where there is a genuine rivalry.
But isn't it remarkable to think maybe, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, would we have been sitting here saying David Warner would be vice captain material that would be supporting, you know, the most
David
popular...
Warner not be in jail was the question.
Well, yeah, not only that, but you would have thought that maybe he would have been enticed by the 2020 format and just gone around the world to win money and claim all the accolades in the short format and just be very flashy. He has just been phenomenal and turning his attention to the test arena. So Steve Smith, and in his recent press conferences, you know, Steve Smith said the test arena is still his number one focus. And I think that is very important for the young kids growing up now with all this big bash flashy stuff that they all want to, you know, those two, Mitchell Starc and hopefully Peter Hanscom, are going to be our three that go, you know, four that go across all formats of the game and treat them just as equal as popular as each other.
And Smith's rise as well in the public esteem. I remember a few years ago when they had a little segment and the question was to the Australian cricketers, can you name Australia's first Prime Minister? And Steve Smith gave a quizzical look and the genuine answer he gave was it Bob Hawke? So I think that he's come a long way in terms of the... that he's now got a great deal of gravitas is speaks a lot.
So in that fourth one day, chasing 353, Pakistan all out for 267. Hazelnut and Zampa took 3 wickets each. Would you say that was a fairly forgettable one day series? I think it's been swamped by the Big Bash.
Oh, Pakistan dropping catches, it wasn't a good game on their behalf. The only thing interesting out of that was that we saw the spinners again opening the innings with a new, brand new fresh ball, and it was a spinner that opened it, and hopefully we see a lot more of that. But I think that was a good talking point from Pakistan's decision.
And also, there were 31,000, which is a pretty good crowd. And on Twitter, when Pakistan won the second game, although one day cricket in this country and this series seemed quite forgettable, it wasn't in Pakistan. That was a big win for them. There was lots of people on Twitter saying, what do you think about that now, Ian Chappell, after he'd suggested that Pakistan shouldn't bother turning up. So although one days in Australia are fading a little bit, in the subcontinent, they're still very, very popular.
So great series victory there for the Australians. The one day side now turns its attention to the Chappell Hadley Trophy coming up in New Zealand next month. Now let's move on to the next segment of the Australian Cricket Podcast. This is Read and React. And this week I've chosen an article by Malcolm Knox from the Sydney Morning Herald that he wrote about the Big Bash League. And he wrote a mid-year report card. And there's a lot of great talking points that Malcolm has brought up, and I thought it'd be great to get Fiona and Shannon's opinion on many of these points. And let's start with his first proposition that the Big Bash League's ideal summer babysitting. He said, you know, here's the nuclear family setting. Dinner is done, the kitchen is tidied up, and the olds retire to the veranda for a wind down glass of wine, and exhausted kids get to watch the Big Bash League before bed. I would say that's a pretty accurate picture of what's happening in Australian households. What do you think?
I think the beauty of Big Bash is that it's on pretty much every night. So it's in the summer in Australia, it's just about sport, really. So to be able to switch on the cricket every night is such a refreshing change. And yeah, it's a great way for families to sit around and really get into it. It's exciting. The kids love it. They start learning about cricket straight away at that really young age without having to sit through tests as it once was. And I think, yeah, he's hit the nail on the head with how things look now.
Well, I don't know. My friends or people I listen to or chat with, they say that they're excited, you know, if it's a male, he's like, I came home, or my wife said, can we turn the Big Bash on? Or I come home and she's got the TV on. And I'm like, that's more the interesting thing, is it's not the parents are letting the kids watch them and they're just sitting out in the veranda. No, I think that both partners...
They're watching it together.
They're both watching it together, or someone else has put it on first that maybe in the household usually doesn't, and the kids are there with them. So, from my, I guess, interaction with people, they're surprised that their other half or their partner is actually getting involved and now wants it on or has it on and they haven't even told them to turn it over.
Now, Shannon, I've seen you out at the Sixers match days. How would you describe the engagement of the young children and families with the whole Big Bash experience? Because the highlight for me is the reaction of the young families at the Big Bash. It's amazing.
It's one of the more remarkable things. If we think we're into Big Bash 06 and the women's is only into its second season, to see the amount of kids that are there in every sort of walkway of every bay, there would be about 20 kids hanging over with bats waiting to get a signature, and the 12th man walks around aimlessly. The last game I was at, it was Dougie Bollinger for the Derby, stopped and signed autographs because he was absolutely
handed. Did he scare
handed.
Any kids? 'Cause he's got that
no, with his bush ranger. No, no. they just love him. And I took a photo, and there was the photo I captured with this young kid just looking up like it was God. It was just remarkable. These kids, and the interesting thing is girls and boys, and the age range would be probably about 4, you know, to 13 plus hanging over the fence. Then you get a bit cool and you sort of sit back and relax and you don't want that signature. But yeah, the young kids have been outstanding in terms of them wanting and calling out, and you talk to them and they now pick their favorite player from a boys or girls team, or they give you both, which is remarkable.
It's amazing how accessible the Big Bash is, and how it's amazing to think, a lot of amazings here.
You're amazing, Paul. You're amazing.
We're amazing. We can sing that. We'll pop that underneath. Are we allowed to sing on this podcast?
You can do whatever you want.
In retrospect, it's extraordinary that cricket was so popular for so long, when the barriers to entry were so high that if you hadn't watched a game before, you had to sit through hours and hours of what seemed so interminably boring and difficult. And suddenly now we have gone from the most inaccessible sport to, I would argue, probably the most accessible. You get someone who's never watched a game of cricket before, put them in front of the Big Bash, and they probably find it entertaining in a way that they may not for almost any other sport. It's a remarkable change in just a couple of years.
One remarkable change they need to make for next season is axe the project while the Big Bash is on, because I think it just drags it on too long, the start time. I liked it when it started at 7 o'clock, perfect time for kids, finished around 10, absolute perfect timing for families. So I think the project should be delayed until the Big Bash is over. I hope there are no project fans listening. Now let's move on to Chris Lynn. Now he's talked, Malcolm Knox has written about how Chris Lynn has become such a star. And what I want to point out, and it's something we touched on just then, was it's amazing how the Big Bash has propelled these domestic cricketers. And Chris Lynn has only played for Australia a few times. And they've propelled these domestic cricketers into the spotlight, and now they're becoming stars in their own right. It's quite unbelievable.
It allows an opportunity to see these players that you didn't have before. They were in, you know, Shield cricket, and they weren't on television. But that's how you make the stars. They've got to be seen, and kids are at the games, but they're able to sit at home and see their talents, and it's exciting, and they're playing exciting cricket, so they're going to become megastars.
And I think it's a real payoff for all their hard work. I know in your podcast you've interviewed some sports people, and they always talk about the amount of work they put in that we don't see. And then for them to be able to be on centre stage, even if it's for just 6 weeks like this, it is amazing for domestic cricketers that might be playing grey cricket a week after the Big Bash is over.
Yeah, well, because you think if, like, the New South Wales Shield, that's their team or their squad, but they've got the Sydney Sixers and the Thunder. So you've got young kids like Chris Green.
Ryan Gibson.
You know, absolutely kind of coming from nowhere and being an absolute star in the Big Bash, and then, you know, we'll struggle to get a Shield game. But also, I think this year's exciting because, you know, in the women's, we've got Lisa Stelaker still out of retirement, really coming back to play when she can. Mitchell Johnson coming back. But then at the other end, I was so excited to see that Darcy Short, who's playing in Hobart, Territorian. I was Googling everything about him. I chatted to him and I was like, hey, fellow Territorian.
You chatted to him. That must have been a long chat.
Yeah, it was brief, and he wasn't as excited as I was about us both being from Darwin, but we can work on that. And then I was like, who else is from the Territory? Weatherald is from, you know, from the Adelaide Strikers. So then I got into this, all these little young up-and-coming names and actually wanting to find out where they're from. So you've got, I reckon, the newcomers, but then we've got some great, to see Mitchell Johnson, he wants to be back in it and being a part of what this whole movement's about.
Darcy Short is one of those batsmen that certainly lets his bat do the talking in his mouth.
In terms of the age gap, Anthony Everard said to us how there's Brad Hogg, who's about to turn 46, and there's Annabelle Sutherland, who's 15. So you've got an age gap that's, you know, treble the age of from the oldest to the youngest. It's quite amazing.
But too, also, I think our Australian cricketers are being spoken more. You know, last year it was all about Chris Gayle and the imports. And I think maybe, you know, after Andre Russell and injuries and some of the, you know, we've seen them come and go. You know, we're not talking, I think, that much about Stuart Broad playing in the league. It's more about our Aussies this year. And that's exciting. We do need a couple of, you know, international recruits, but for numbers and to keep the quality. But I think we're talking more about our Australian cricketers than we are the internationals.
It touches on a good point, the fact that cricket has always been a very closed shop. You've only got 11 places in the side. If the selectors don't like you, you're not in. Often the players who are just outside the limelight are every bit as good. In a sport like tennis, where you rise and fall just on your merits, they will get discovered. In cricket, there are players who now are getting a chance to shine, like someone like Chris Lynn, who would have been in the Australian, possibly Test side now if it weren't for injury. Had the Big Bash never come along, he'd probably still be just playing Shield cricket anonymously.
Who's the youngster? Is it Harrison? Who's playing for the Renegades with the gloves now that Peter Neville's injured? He was selling T-shirts at a sports store last week, and now he's probably wearing the Big Bash shirt that he was selling last week. Came from nowhere, came from grade cricket because, and if, you know, he does well, there's an opportunity that he would never have got. Sold out stadium, millions of people watching him. Admittedly, we can't quite remember his name exactly now, but we won't forget it when he plays.
Harrison or something? You brought up Chris Gayle, and it's actually an interesting point, one that I wanted to raise, especially because we've got Fiona and Shannon here, might be able to bring a different perspective. There was some publicity on the weekend about his apparent willingness to come back to the Big Bash if a team would have him. And I ran a Twitter poll on the weekend, asked whether people would like to see Chris Gayle come back. And I was quite surprised. It was fairly split down the middle. The opinion was almost 50-50, I would say. Maybe slightly towards him coming back. I don't want him to come back. What do you think?
As someone, that result doesn't surprise me. As someone who worked in NRL for quite a long time, the sporting public is very forgiving of misdemeanors. And I think what Chris Gayle did is one that they would rate on a very low scale.
Well, compared to rugby league, yes.
Yeah. as a female, I wouldn't want him back yet, but I don't like closing the door on them either because it's saying that you can never forgive someone for something that they did. He would need to show regret and remorse for what happened and understanding of why there was outrage,
which Instagram feed would...
Didn't he call his daughter Blush?
Suggest that he hasn't
or that
had
was
any
the rumor.
Regret or remorse.
Hopefully he didn't.
What do you think, Shannon? Like him coming back or loathe Gayle returning?
To be fair, couldn't...
Be honest.
Couldn't care less either way. I think it would be a club that, you know, I think the clubs now, after the successful year without him, would say, you need us, we don't need you. So for my mind, if he wanted to come back, he would have to find a club that would have a lot more rules to say, this is how you toe the line. I think he got a little bit ahead of himself. And I think if he is looking in, it is flourishing without him. And I think that's an exciting thing, that we don't need players like him of that calibre just about the name. We now want quality cricketers. We don't want big names coming in that are underdone. And I think we've seen that once or twice this season. But for my mind, I don't mind. But I really think all the clubs realise they can survive without him, and he would have to pull his head in if he wanted to come back.
I think he's a bit of a time bomb ticking if he were to come back. And I can imagine
him
saying things to
fuel the fire. Yeah, but then that's the club's
discretion.
If he does anything out of line, they get rid of him. Or Cricket Australia, you know, they have to be swifter on the punishment.
Yeah, I kind of agree. It doesn't really... I don't care too much either way, but I think I'd prefer him not to come back. But if he came back and showed remorse, then, yeah, I could handle that.
Unlikely. Well, that was Read and React this week. Now I wanted to talk about the WBBL. And it's amazing that the Women's Big Bash League has been one of the real success stories for Australian sport. This year, viewing figures are up 19% on last year on Channel 10. Halfway through the tournament, cricket.com.au had almost 4.6 million views of the WBBL highlights, smashing the whole season aim already. When you think about it, this is where it came from, that in early 2015, an Australian Sports Commission study found that coverage of male sport made up 81% of television sports news coverage, compared to women at 8.7%. To put this into context, horse racing received more airtime than women's sport in Australian television news. What do you ladies think the Women's Big Bash League has done for women in sport in this country?
I think it's set the mark. It was one of the first to say, we're going to give you your own league, and it will be a step towards putting it where the men's game is. And the response, based purely on the quality that was produced from the first season of the WBBL, showed that if you back it, it will happen. If you look at other sports, the AAU backed Rugby Sevens 4 years ago by making it professional, and they got the results. And so what is happening now is organisations are prepared to put the money into it. And when they do that, they're going to get the quality. because the players will improve, they get the proper training, they get more time to train, and they've got the skills there. It's just about nurturing them. And the WBBL has just been a revelation in that sense. And it's, I think it's only going to get bigger.
How good has it been in terms of two super overs, pretty much deciding where the standings are for the season? Hurricanes get in, sneak into the finals at the with their super over. I was at the derby with the super over. It was just extraordinary. 17,000 were there for that derby and got in early for the double header. I just think that in terms of what it has done, as like Fee says, it's really started the benchmark and the movement of taking women's sport more seriously. And I think for whoever gets the next TV rights, if they were smart, they'd actually put more double headers on for the women's. I still think they can maybe do a couple more double headers so that people get to see them. You know, over the weekend it was free to go to North Sydney Oval and you're seeing the best of the best. I just think it's phenomenal that our Australian female cricketers are leading the way, and the internationals that want to come and play. We've got two Indians playing this year, and it's just phenomenal to see.
I'm harping on about this all the time to Menas, but I wish that in the next TV deal, one thing that I'd like with the double headers is that they have it so that the women's game finishes 5 minutes before the men's game starts. At the moment, there's an hour and a half gap.
It's probably impractical because you have warm-ups and stuff. So I think what you're saying is get the gap down. Maybe 5 minutes is impossible, but even if it was 20 minutes, half an hour.
But we did see in Super Over that went for so long. You know, it does. You have to have that sort of hour in case you're going running over a women's game, don't you?
Yeah, but I think that would be good TV for the broadcaster if the new game was starting and it's, oh, before the men's game, we've got a super over for the women's game. I think that even people who are sceptical about the competition would tune in for a super over. So I think that would be great to get the gap reduced. I agree, maybe 5 minutes is too impractical, but a lot less than now.
I think a few things really stand out for me from the WBBL success. One is that maybe 2 years ago, if you'd asked someone about who's a women cricketer in Australia, they'd say Elise Perry and Meg Lanning, and then they'd struggle to name any more. But now, that you know, a lot more of the BBL cricketers are household names, so they've really increased in their status. But also, I think that it's amazing for young women to have these role models now that are so visible in professional sport. To see them alongside the men's Big Bash cricket, I just think it does wonders for what young women can aspire to in sport in this country.
Well, there's not too many codes, as you mentioned, that you could have the men and women. So we're going to see the launch of the women's AFL, but you've only got 8 teams. So not every club can support, you know, so if you go for a certain club and they don't have a women's team, you're actually going to have to pick another team, which, you know, in the history of things like the AFL and NRL, once you go for a club, you're sort of born into it. So that's going to be interesting. But I think at least with the women's, they are aligned with the men's, which is great. The same with the W League, having a Canberra United, just a women's team alone, they really struggle to get that support. So the cricket is one area, you know, it hasn't happened in the NRL yet either. Cricket is the one area where you've got a men's and women's team and you make it a club and you bring in the families to say your daughter or son can play for the Sixers, for the Thunder, for the Perth Scorchers.
Prefer
and
the Sixers. But,
yeah. But do you know what I mean? Like, it's actually the only code where you can actually genuinely come into the club.
Really smart marketing from Cricket Australia to keep it all the same names and not change them for each comp. So the semi-final teams for the WBBL this year, the Scorchers v. the Heat and the Sixers v. the Hurricanes. I think the amazing thing about the WBBL for people who haven't watched it is how entertaining the matches are. And I guess the listeners out there, it's very available. Stream the matches, watch the final. They're really close contests, really competitive. They're a little bit less runs are scored than in the men's game, but there's a lot of them go down to the last over. We saw a match on the weekend where I think the Stars netted 6 off the last ball and there was a no ball, which was hit for 6, and they ended up winning with just needed 1 off the last ball. So dramatic stuff.
That's the other thing too, is it's still exciting play. So Alyssa Healy scored, I think, 84 on the weekend, and she hit 11 fours and 1 6 in that knock. So the girls are able to make the distance. I had Ash Gardner out last week, whacking it into the stands at the SCG off slow balls, and she made it look effortless. They're able to do it. Stefani Taylor does it nearly every time
Dotton. She smashes ball.
They hit the roof of North Sydney Oval, and you know, people are like, thinking, oh, but the ropes are always in all these sixes. And then sometimes you have to go, oh, no, it was a man six. Mm-hmm. That's how you have to describe it.
Well,
it's like
Perry that went over the fig tree at North Sydney.
Oh, just phenomenal. And I think it is only improving in terms of the professionalism that the teams are wanting to produce, because we're in the second season. I think the improvement we've seen from season one to two has been enormous. And I reckon it's going to improve every year because they are on show and the clubs want to be seen to be promoting them and supporting them, and they're going to get better coaches in for them.
Well, before we move on, I want to go through the Have a Go Your Mug promotion. Now, listeners will know that if you can leave a review on iTunes or whatever app you listen to the show on, and then email me and let me know you've left a review, you will go in the draw for a Have a Go Your Mug. Now, we've got two entries this week. We've got Siddharth and Tony Abbott, or not Tony Abbott. Now, I'm going to get Fiona to draw this one out.
Not Tony Abbott.
This is a great one. I'm looking forward to you reading this one out.
Generally, this is a great podcast with a great knowledge and passion for the game. An issue, however, is when despite recognise their biases, I'm going to read this word for word.
Okay? Yeah, I want you to. I really want you to. For
there
Tony.
Is a failure to critique themselves as much as they are prepared to critique others. A prime example of this is their criticism of Justin Langer. Interesting. Sure. Like him or hate him as you will, but don't lie about him. Langer did not force Hogg out of the Scorchers. Not only was he a required player for BBL 06, Langer offered him more money to stay. Renegades had deeper pockets, given they no longer had to pay for Gale, so he took the extra short-term cash. Short-term, in inverted commas, is the critical issue here. Langer is on public record as stating that not only was Hogg required for this season, but the Scorchers wanted to sign him for another 5 to 10 years. In any capacity, even as a coach or in marketing, once his playing career is over. This is a far cry from the quite frankly nonsensical, unceremoniously booted Brad Hogg statement made by James McSmith during episode 168. Langer's actual words, "I wish he hadn't gone. At least I can sleep at night knowing we offered him more money to stay. At least pretend to be honest."
Thank you, not Tony Abbott. Yeah. And well read, Fiona.
Well done. Now, yeah, you can read. You're a good
now, speech
reader.
I have a response to that. Now, Jameson Smith, upon seeing that review, sent me a link to an article, and it said, Melbourne Renegades recruit Brad Hogg says a suggestion from Justin Langer that he should retire on a high note and a desire to create opportunities for young spinners were the major reasons behind his decision to leave the Perth Scorchers. So there's some bit of controversy this one. Langer saying he should retire. Hogg saying he should retire. Hogg was saying he was told to retire. Who to believe?
And not Tony Abbott thought he had another 10 years in him.
Well, the next podcast, I think your guest should be Brad Hogg, Justin Langer, and not Tony Abbott.
Well, that would be an amazing podcast. Now, listeners, we're
going
to take...
Could I be in the room for that?
Yeah.
Now, listeners, we're going to take a quick break, and if you can email us in any questions at AusCricketPod, AusCricketPod@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at AusCricketPod. We're on Facebook as the Australian Cricket Podcast. Remember, tell all your cricket-loving friends to subscribe to the show, and we'll be back in a moment.
That's it. Well, a fighting 100, a gutsy one, one completely different in style and character to that of Taylor and Slater, but a big crowd giving him everything he deserves. 1500 for Australia, fourth against England.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. That was David Boone scoring a test century at Lord's back in 1993. And it's cricket's night of nights tonight with the Alan Border Medal presentation tonight. Anyone excited?
I was in the first couple of Alan Border Medals. I used to like them. And then suddenly they just fell off a cliff in terms of entertainment. And now, if someone wanted to pay me a considerable amount of money, I would watch it.
I thought you might be hosting it with Mark Nicholas taken ill at the moment. I wonder who will be hosting it. Maybe Michael Slater can reenact his dance with the wine to Jimmy Barnes as the host.
Well, I guess the serious nature of it is they have included two more women's awards. So they are trying to boost, I think, and support...
Best dressed?
Yeah. Well, no.
I'm joking.
Actually, awards. I know. I was like, oh, well, I don't actually, yeah. But so that at least is, you know, they're recognising that. But
It is a cringeworthy night of television, I have to say.
I think awards nights in general can be a bit tedious.
But when it's not entertainers doing it, it's really bad.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that with the Brownlow, it's for the purists that you get. If you're into that, you get hours and hours of it. In this, you kind of don't get that because they just put the results up almost sort of randomly and there's all these equations. So you don't get that part of it, and the entertainment's sort of lacking, so it doesn't really achieve anything. I'd rather if they just went full boring and went, we're just going to go through match by match and give 3-2-1s. At least that would be something.
Yeah, well, the comedians never go down well on Alan Border Medal Night. Now, of note is David Boone, Matt Hayden and Betty Wilson have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Also, they had a 30-year reunion for the 1987 World Cup where they were all presented medals. An interesting note, it wasn't until, I think, 92 that the winners got medals. So they've gone back and presenting medals to 75, 79, 83 and 87. They all got them.
That team was at their CG, wasn't it? Didn't they do a lap of honour with their medals?
Yeah, and I would suggest they would have had a few drinks last night. The 80s tended to hit the stubbies pretty hard back then.
And just one thing on Betty Wilson, if you haven't heard of her, she's an off-spinning all-rounder from the 40s and 50s who in her 11 test matches averaged 57 with the bat and 11.8 with the ball. So very worthy of being in the Hall of Fame.
Now, to end this show, I've saved my favourite segment till last. Now that we've got Fiona and Shannon here, it's the commentary critique. Especially going to be good having you, Shannon, being a commentator. Let's start, though, with women in cricket broadcasting. We talked about the WBBL, but I think this summer there's been a notable increase in women broadcasting cricket. I mean, to just name a few, we've seen or heard Lisa Stelaker, Mel Jones, Alison Mitchell, Issa Guha and Neroli Meadows all broadcasting cricket, and that's just a snapshot of it. I mean, what a change. Only 2 years ago, Alison Mitchell was the first woman to broadcast a men's international cricket match in this country. Now it's taken as commonplace. It's amazing.
I think it's, along with the WBBL and the women's game really growing, that's part of it, is that it's an acceptance, I suppose you could say, that women are part of the game and know the game. I think Issa Guha and her placement with Triple M this season was just fantastic, and she ended up opening the commentary, I think, for the second test for them. And you know, she knows her stuff.
It would have been unheard of a few years ago.
100%. And she was almost carrying that, like, as one of the experts. They had a lot of comedians and a lot of a light-hearted tone to it all, but she added the gravitas to the commentary.
Well, it was funny. I'm not saying there's a lot of downtime in test matches, but in the commentary box, Alison and I took a photo and we reenacted. We first met working on the 2009 Women's World Cup at North Sydney Oval. So she was calling and involved with cricket back then. That's the first time we heard her on Grandstand, was 2009. And we had a photo with myself, Quentin Hull was there, and Peter Walsh. So Grandstand did the coverage of it.
Two blokes to bring that photo right down.
And so we had the World Cup.
Shannon's showing me the photo, by the way.
And so Alison and I got Chris Rogers' Nutribullet, and we used that as a trophy and then reenacted what we were at our standing position. And we would have thought, you know, like, we've known each other since the 2009 World Cup. But it's interesting to note that people are talking about her in a positive light this year. But we like to think in Grandstand that we had worked with her for many, many years. And it's more that if people are complimenting her and not talking of her, that's the shift. I think it's more people going, oh, she's great. And it's always, as a female commentator, you always check. You don't take the good things on board. If you get no negative publicity, then you're doing well. And there has not been an ounce of negative publicity for Grandstand with Alison. And Lisa Stelaker, as you mentioned, also on Grandstand. And just recently in the one day at the SCG, we had Sarah Ailey on from the Sydney Sixers alongside Trent Copeland and Stuart Clark. And, you know, I just think that it's not unfamiliar now to have a female voice, expert or commentator.
And it would be good if Channel 9 soon got someone, a female, on the test coverage, I think.
Now, do you think there's been an attitude shift from producers that you know, work out who's going to commentate? Do you think there's less reticence now to put females broadcasting?
Well, I don't think that much thought goes into it in terms of, I think some teams are set up, but you don't just want to be the token female as well. So Roz Kelly coming on to the Big Bash League is a great fit. We know she's a cricket commentator and expert before she went and lived in South Africa. So it's just a natural fit. Like, no one's talking about it, like, to see her on the big screen taking over from Mel McLaughlin. I think it's more if you do see stations or commentary teams adding a female, you just want it to be someone that has been in the cricket circle, not let's introduce a girl and make her talk about cricket.
Oh, great, absolutely.
Who are some of your favourite women sports broadcasters, especially cricket?
Ooh, I'm going to need a moment.
Okay, I'll go. Well, Alison Mitchell, like, to see her progress. And, you know, she just doesn't do cricket. She does tennis, and she works on the Olympics for the BBC as well. So she is an all-rounder, but her number one sport is cricket. She also does netball as well over in the Super League in England. So she, yeah, is very much an all-rounder. But I just, yeah, love hearing her on the radio ball by ball. She's groundbreaking around the world. Also, Lisa Stelaker, obviously because I've worked with her a lot, but her and Mel Jones then going off to do the IPL as well and being amongst some of the first females to actually be included in the IPL, which would be, I would imagine, a hard circle to get into. So for my mind, cricket-wise, those guys really have set the bar, not just in Australia, but globally.
I think what is great about the female broadcasters in the cricket is that people don't really talk about it. They're there and they do their job, and it's yeah, almost like that, you don't
I think
notice
you both
it.
Are taking this for granted, because I think a couple of years ago, people would have talked about it. And I think that's the attitude shift, that we're not talking about it now and it's accepted.
But the beauty of it too is that in other codes and other sports, it's very much talked about still, and it's very noticeable if a female is added. And in terms of commentary, it's just not happening. Whereas cricket, it's really opened up. And I think it's just been a shift in attitude to the women's game in general. And there are such talented broadcasters existing in the game who have been doing it for a long time. So for them to suddenly appear like they're stepping up, they're really not. They're just still doing a job that they've been doing for a while.
I really like Georgie Bingham, who maybe not well known in Australia, but she's a host on Talk Sport in the UK. And when I've had some holidays driving up and down the UK, I've had that on all the time. And she's one of the most entertaining broadcasters on sports that there are.
Jackie Oatley as well, I'd have to say too, from the UK, is one of my favourites in terms of she was the first to call EPL, doesn't do it as much, doesn't do it anymore, but she's another great broadcaster that I've kept an eye on from afar.
Yeah, I've seen her as well. She's been on panel shows in England as well, Would I Lie to You and stuff like that. She's really sort of hit the mainstream.
Now, before we move on, Shannon, you've been in the grandstand box this summer. Any backstage stories you want to share with the listeners?
No, I think I just shared that Chris Rogers had a Nutribullet and would make us smoothies in the morning.
That's true. That's what he'd make breakfast in the morning.
He would, yep. Jim Maxwell and I would line up to get our smoothie in the morning. So that was the first time I've seen a Nutribullet in a commentary box.
It would be a bit noisy, I would think.
Oh, yeah, he had only a time limit in the lead up to the first ball and actually going to air.
What was his smoothie order?
Look, I wasn't too fussy.
Avocado and banana?
Yeah, it was whatever fruit he could get from the kitchen.
Well, that is the hot gossip from the grandstand box. Thank you, Shannon. Chris Rogers is on the Nutribullets. Now, there's been a lot of speculation in the last week, actually. A lot of speculation that Channel 9 could snare the Big Bash rights from Channel 10 in the next round of negotiations for the cricket rights. Now, this would make a huge shift in the coverage of the Big Bash. And I thought to end this show, we would put on our production and selectors' hats and just pretend that Channel 9 were given the rights, but they were also given a memorandum of Cricket Australia that they had to integrate some of the commentators from the Channel 10 box into the Channel 9 box. Now, I've got a list here of Channel 9 and Channel 10 commentators, and we're going to try and pick our top six to see who would fill a supposed box of Channel 9 and Channel 10 commentators. Let's start with the first position we need to fill.
All right.
Let's start with Channel 10, and I would say Gilly would be a lock for a combined box of Channel 9 and Channel 10. It'd be interesting to see how many Channel 9 commentators make this final six.
Mm.
We'd have to do three each.
This is a round table. Okay. This is a round table. So would you have Gilly in there in your top six?
Yes.
I think Everyone would, but I wouldn't. I'd have him just outside the top six.
Okay, so you're outvoted 3-1.
I really like Gilly. Best cricket I've ever seen and a very good commentator.
So Gilly gets a run in then. Let's go to Channel 9. Michael Slater. Where do we think he ranks? Do we like him?
Mind him. I'd consider him.
So he's a maybe.
I agree. Yeah, I quite like him. I think, like Gilly for me, just going to miss the cut.
Well, looking down the list, you've got Mark Nicholas, Michael Clarke, Ian Healy, Mark Taylor, Ian Chappell, Shane Warne, Bill Laurie. I guess he deserves consideration, although he's part-time. I mean, Slater probably would be the best suited for T20 cricket, and he's quite a good host. I wouldn't want to suffer through Clarke anymore. Do you like Clarke's commentary?
I think Slats is a good all-rounder.
Okay, so we're going to give Slats a go. There are Gillian Slats. Michael Clarke's out. I'm going to say Shane Warne. Do we like... Yes.
Yeah.
I think he's improved. I like him.
Yeah, I think he's entertaining. I think 4 out of 5 things, I think he's really good when he agrees with me. And then the 1 out of 5 when he disagrees with me, I think he's crazy.
So Warne gets a call. So far you've got Gilly, Slats and Warne. Okay, so we've got 2 Channel 9 commentators. I think that's pretty good so far. Now let's go back to Channel 10. Kevin Peterson, rate him or not as a commentator?
No. I can't handle the accent.
I just can't handle him.
Says a lady who's married to an Italian.
Yeah.
So it's not just Italian. It's not just Italian.
A racially motivated decision. KP's out. Quotas have got KP again.
Hey, if women can be ruled out because of their voices, I can rule KP out because of his accent.
I agree. All right, so Damien Fleming. Now, he's my favourite commentator.
I love Damien Fleming.
You love Fleming?
Yep.
What about you, Shannon? You were sort of shaking your head.
Well, I love Andrew Simon, so I'm more going to who I...
But have you heard Simon's commentate?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Right out of the box. There with Do you know I have learnt so much that it is a good idea to write things you've got to remember on your windscreen so when you get in and out of the car every morning. And no, actually, he was one of my favourite players. I was a Dean Jones and then Andrew Simons. They were my favourite players. I don't know if it was the zinc. But he's something different. It's refreshing. It is quite unique.
Differently boring?
Unique.
I don't think he's that bad.
Yeah.
So we know what you think, man.
I think he was overhyped.
But I think that he started to live up to it a bit. That initially it was like, we've got a really funny friend. You guys don't know he's funny. Tell us a joke. And it probably didn't work. But then when he eased into it, I started to like him.
Well, he's not going into the box because we can't agree that that's a split. We were on Fleming though. Shannon, were you a Fleming no? Is that a no? Would you have him in your box?
Well, he'll go in instead of Andrew Simons then.
Well, there's others to consider. What about you?
I like him, and I put a quota on how many times you can say avenue of apprehension and doorway to departure. That you'd have to have a limit on that, and then maybe you can go in.
I'm going to rule Fleming out simply because he mentions AFL too much for a cricket broadcast, so that's him out.
How many have we got?
We've got three so far. We've got three spots to fill. Okay. Three more spots to
fill. Can I throw Mel Jones straight in there? You've got to have a woman.
You
don't have to have a token woman.
But she's good.
She's
good.
No, I had her just because she was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have Mel in there as well. Yeah. I say that after.
Are you changing your list, man?
Yeah. There's a lot of editing going on over there.
Yeah, a lot of self-editing. All right. So far we've got Gilly Slater, Warne and Mel Jones as our combined Channel 9, Channel 10 team. That leaves 2 spots left.
Healy.
Yeah.
Really?
Wow.
That controversy.
Healy. Amazing. No, I don't mind Healy, but it just always, to me, seemed okay. But
So would he go in there ahead of someone like Mark Taylor or Ian Chappell for you?
Taylor.
You could flip a coin for Healy and Chappell.
Wow.
Because Healy's the one that probably, looking on Twitter, is the most, I think, disliked by the rest of the world because they mistake... He's trying to drum up enthusiasm for being biased and partisan towards wanting Australia to win. I don't think he really cares. But I find him okay. What do you really like about him?
I guess I have a bit of a personal preference for him because I'm going to tell a little story here. Met Ian Healy when I was about maybe 12 or 13 years old.
Long time ago. Sorry, I got the sneezes.
Was he playing then?
He was. He sat behind us at... the rugby league semi-finals, and they'd just gotten back from the Ashes, had won, and he was the nicest bloke. offered us some of his pie that he was eating at the time, talked to everyone around. He was just a champion. And from then on, I've loved him. And I like his commentary, and I don't find it irritating or anything. So I'm quite happy to have him there.
Yeah, I don't find him irritating either. Mm. And but I think a lot of overseas people seem to. But anyway.
I think he was an irritating cricketer for overseas teams as well.
Yeah,
champion bloke, but there's enough division here. He probably doesn't make the top six. So
I want Howie in there.
Why don't you just tell us your top six?
All right, so we got. Okay, so you all three for Healy? Because half-half's not a yeah. split. So Healy's out.
Chappell, I want Howie in there because I want to. I want one non-cricketer. I think that there's more room for people who haven't played top level cricket. I'd have six non-cricketers if it was me, but I'm crazy.
You're just angling for a job. That's what you're saying.
Hold on, your name's not down here. How did you get in the list?
Oh, damn it.
I just assumed I was in there.
You can be 15th man. All right, so let's Healy doesn't make it. Let's go back to the Channel 10 box because there's a couple of notable omissions. Ricky Ponting has got rave reviews for Hibs commentary. Does he deserve a crack?
I think so.
Yep.
Yes. I'd be okay with that.
We're all agreeing on that. That's a universal yes.
I'd be strongly in favour of that. I think
so. That's five of the six spots. That leaves one left.
William Morris Laurie. Get him out of retirement.
Well, you said Howie a minute ago.
Yeah. We haven't got Howie in yet.
I
think Howie does. Do you want to recap? After his tactical blunder last week.
Oh, that was
unfortunately,
a bit of fun.
A bit of fun? Giving stats in the middle of a game? Come on. That could almost rule him out. So where do we sit on Howie? Is that a...
I'd be okay with that.
Fiona would be okay. Shannon, not sure. Not nondescript.
Yeah. Yep.
And Paul's a yes. Okay, so there's one spot left. Is there anyone else you think has to be there?
Do you want to plead your case for Simons again?
No, what? Can we go through who we've got? I'm so confused.
Okay, so we've got Gilly, Michael Slater, Shane Warne, Mel Jones, and Ricky Ponting. We need one more to complete the commentary team. One last spot at the selection table up for grabs. Mark Waugh, no.
I like him. Mm. I like Mark Waugh.
But does he have to be there?
Doesn't have to be there. Another one who doesn't have to be there, but I'm going to say a word in favour of, is, and I think I'm still to this day the only one I know that I really like Mark Nicholas as a commentator.
I agree, I think he's a fantastic commentator.
I thought you didn't like him.
Huh. No, I've come the full circle this summer.
Oh,
with
great.
Mark Nicholas. I think he's
But he was sick for some of it, so...
Well, maybe that's why I liked him. It didn't have to his. No, I said that before he got sick, that he's so professional and so good at his job that when he's with commentators that aren't as professional, I think he carries the show. So he's a good one, but that last spot, are we going to give it to Mark Nicholas or Howie or even Ian Chappell? What would you like?
Well, if it's up to me, it's Bill Laurie.
Ian Chappell.
He might not make it till the next TV rights deal, so I don't know if we can put...
He's not bad,
like commentating, I didn't mean like living-wise. Alright, so the last spot is a little bit controversial, but should we put in Mark Nicholas? There's no objections, Fiona.
I think there's what silence. Do you
silence is an objection.
Is that silence? Oh, Prada, are you awake still?
This is a really good...
Gone to the toilet, I'm back.
This is a good window into the selection table.
Oh, like it's terrible.
That's the power of Mark Nicholas, that you don't want to be on a podcast saying you don't rate him because he might be career limiting.
I don't think we're saying we don't rate these all. To get six is hard.
Yeah it is hard. Yeah. It is hard. But let's fill that last spot. Who's it going to be?
Sorry, did we rule out Mark Howard?
No.
I'd put... my hand up for Mark Howard.
Oh, I'm
yeah,
sure
okay,
I'm
me too. I like
Howard,
a non-cricketing.
Look at this, Howard.
I like a non-cricketing being involved.
Despite a huge tactical blunder.
It gives us,
blunder.
Us some hope.
Yes, exactly.
So that's our top six. So this would be if, in hypothetically, the Channel 10 and Channel 9 boxes were combined in the new TV deal, you'd have Gilly, Slater, Warney, Mel Jones, Ricky Ponting, and Mark Howard leading the commentary team if we were in charge.
Probably lucky we're not in charge.
Well, I think...
and hopefully
gun lineup.
Hopefully they don't get it either. Not that there's anything... I think they do a good job. I just think it's good on two networks. Did you see the Batuta Advocate had a satirical article mocking Channel 7 saying, you guys don't cover cricket, you're not relevant. I think it's great that there's two.
I agree. I like the different approach to it and having a bit of change.
Yeah, I think it would feel weird if Channel 9 were to start... covering the Big Bash.
It would alienate non-cricket fans. It's like during the Olympics, people who, I think there are one or two, don't watch the Olympics. You're not going to watch Channel 7 ever. If Channel 9 just had wall-to-wall cricket, the viewers would go away and never come back.
But 7's got tennis, so I'm... sure that, you know, they would never be in the market. But, I mean, the figures are complimentary for the basketball. What are we talking about? Cricket. for cricket. But I don't know. I think the popularity of after this season, who's going to be able to afford all of the formats of cricket?
Channel 9 might be the only one.
But could they get what the Big Bash may be asking for, something like 800 million or something? So I don't know if they could afford it all, and the tests.
They also don't have the same mindset, whereas it was once the international cricket must be on Channel 9. These days they're kind of, we still want it, but we're only going to be pushed so far. Maybe they could go angle to want the Big Bash and let the international rights go elsewhere.
The winners here will be Cricket Australia.
Well, that was our commentary, critique and podcast this week. A huge week of cricket coming up. Shannon, Fiona, you must be excited about the conclusion to the Big Bash.
Very much. I'm actually heading up on Wednesday for the matches there, so I'm looking forward to being at the semi-final.
Are you a big Sixers fan then?
I think I've been drawn into the Sixers. I wouldn't say, based on where I live, that I was one team or the other, but the Sixers probably captured my heart.
Very much looking to the finals and seeing what happens. I think also really excited too, though, for India. And then April the 1st, seeing if
we... What are you excited about in India, Shannon?
Well, some of our youngsters, Swepson, also Peter Hanscom, these guys are going to get a great introduction of what it's like on their first tour overseas. Like, this is exciting. It doesn't get much better than thinking your first international tour is in India.
Going to be a 4-0 series loss.
I give Australia a chance of winning that.
It's people like you that are...
And I'm the only one I've met with me. Who does. Have I met someone else who gives us... There
yep.
we go.
I think I have a really good feeling about this, and it's not that I've had three coffees. And also, we're playing the top nation. We want to get the ranking number one as well. April the 1st, I think it's going to be Australia getting the $1 million bonus.
Agree. Oh,
wow. Well, I love that type of optimism to end an Australian cricket podcast. Listeners, thanks so much for downloading the show again this week. Thanks to all the subscribers on Patreon. Thank you so much, Shannon and Fiona, for coming in. I thoroughly recommend their podcast, This Sporting Wife. Two great cricketers on there recently, Trent Copeland and Lisa Stelaker. So go back and have a listen to them. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll be back next week with the Australian Cricket Podcast.
What a marvellous stroke. He's played no better shot than that in the whole of the series.